Jan, I apologize. You're gonna. I think I remember what we went over last meeting as far as how to conduct this meeting, but I may look for your guidance and.
That's fine.
Reminder.
So if you have your packet, the first thing is just call to order and roll call. And then we'll have public comment. I believe we've received one of those, and Erica will read that into the record. And then you can begin your discussion item, which there's only one of, and that's continuing your short-term rental policy discussion. But I would like to make a couple of comments at the beginning of that, Ross, if possible.
Okay, sounds good. Erica, could you assist me on roll call, please?
Yes. If each planning commissioner and then staff please indicate their attendance when named, starting with the chair, Ross Henry.
Present.
Greg Cohensey.
Present.
Tom Stevenson.
Present.
Attending by phone only. And Seth Gilchrist.
Present.
Michael Murnault.
Present.
And staff Jan Brendink.
Present.
And myself, Erica Castro-Guzman. So there is a planning commission quorum that is present. I can directly move on to the public comment portion. We did receive one comment today via email at 5 o'clock by Shane and Nikki Phelps, and it reads, "Dear Planning Commission members, my wife and I recently purchased a home in downtown White Salmon and are currently using it as part-time as a short-term rental licensed by the City of White Salmon. We spend approximately one-third of our time in our home in White Salmon and the remainder of the time in Portland, Oregon. We are deeply vested in White Salmon as a part-time resident and intend to move to White Salmon after our children have graduated from high school. In the interim, we fully believe that short-term rentals can be a boon for White Salmon, and it is as it allows tourists to see the city as a perspective from a perspective that they would not get from renting a standard hotel or similar boarding facilities. Although it is true that short-term rentals, if not properly administered, can have impacts to the neighborhood character, we believe that the City of White Salmon's current policy is effective and fully encourage you to continue allowing short-term rentals in White Salmon." And again, that was from Shane and Nikki Phelps, Inside City Limits. So Jan, if you want to continue with the discussion item.
Okay, just a few brief comments. Erica forwarded you Greg Hensey's comments about short-term rentals today in an email. And then Tom Stevenson sent an attachment that comes from the Washington State Department of Revenue. We're aware of that attachment. We do make all of our known short-term rental permit holders aware that sales tax is required to be collected and remitted to the state of Washington. If short-term renters are renting through Airbnb or VRBO, those agencies collect the the sales tax at the time they collect rent for the short-term rental, and they transmit that sales tax to the state of Washington. And then we get our small portion that we get from that sales tax. Just as a general comment, I kind of wanted to direct you back to the memo that came with your packet last time. I re-included it. And again, we're not here in this broad discussion to adopt an ordinance or to adopt amendments to any of our codes. We're really looking for some policy guidance to help develop policies that will show up in the comprehensive plan related possibly to both housing or and commercial zoning. I think you're clearly discussing should short-term rentals be allowed. I think one of the big issues that's come up over the last 2 years of just working with short-term rentals in a variety of places is how should they be classified? Are they a residential use or are they a commercial use? And that kind of policy guidance will help later on determine how those are approved. If it's a commercial endeavor, then within a residential zone, it would likely be a conditional use permit. If it's a residential, outright permitted in a residential zone, in a commercial zone, though, then it would have to be a conditional use permit. Currently, our codes do not speak to short-term rentals at all. And some of you may recollect that within commercial zones, we've been treating them as commercial. And that caused some controversy with an approval on some vacant property here in the community. And there was a lot of public comment and some discussion about that. It's also possible that all short-term rentals could be a conditional use permit, just so that it allows review of parking and all of those kinds of things. The process that we currently have in place is just a registration process. It is not a land use process. So all it does is says, I, Jan Brinding, I'm renting my house out or my ADU out as a short-term rental, and I'm getting a business license and I'm registering that short-term rental so that the city knows where that short-term rental is at, and it helps us educate the homeowner that yes, indeed, sales tax is required to be collected and remitted. You need to be a good neighbor, et cetera, et cetera. So as you continue to your discussion today, I think the ordinances are good. It helps maybe give some guidance to how other entities are handling short-term rentals in their land use code. But again, we're looking for some really broad guidance, which then we can take back as we're developing those goals and policies in the housing. And just as another comment, and you guys have, some of you have heard this before, you heard it from our consultants, that sometimes policies will cause friction with each other. And even Greg's comments kind of highlighted that. You know, short-term rentals can be good. Short-term rentals can be bad. When it comes to potentially the impacts on housing. And so when we get to the point in the Conference of Plan where we're looking at those broad housing goals and policies, you'll be tasked with how to interrelate short-term rental policies in with that, and how those balance out, because it'll be a balancing task as to how those all work. So now I'm just going to turn it back over to you, Ross. I thought the process that you guys used 2 weeks ago worked really well once we got into that routine.
Okay. Thank you, Jan, for that insight. And
can I have a quick point of privilege just at the beginning here, just to make a note that due to childcare issues, I'm only actually able to attend for just over the first hour of today's meeting, and then I have to sign off and take over from a babysitter. So I just wanted to let you guys know that.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I will have my kids arriving here very loudly, probably in the next hour. So yeah, I think my goal in facilitating this discussion is to keep on task and to stay on point with short-term rentals, and I appreciate, Jan, your guidance or your input on what we might be wanting to discuss and look at. I do want to make sure that we get input from all of the commissioners equally. And I felt like in our last meeting, by going around the table with each individual, achieve that. So I'd like to keep with that. I would also, we also kept our time to 2 minutes. I felt like that also was beneficial to ensuring broad input. So I would like to Yes, institute both of those, and also have the floor open if anybody has any other recommendations before we get started.
Ross? Will we be making our discussion on separate issues together rather than a free form type where we're discussing everything at once?
Correct. I have some talking points that I would like to start out with that I think will engage everyone in discussion. And then beyond that, if there's something that I miss that someone wants to speak to, I encourage that. So I don't know if that helps you.
No, Hopefully it does. I think any structure would help the discussion.
Correct. And feel free to chime in if you feel like that's not happening. I'll take no offense. Greg, I appreciate your last meeting keeping us on track and ensuring it was a successful discussion. So
can I throw a quick suggestion in too?
Yes. Yes, please.
Maybe the first round is a little longer than 2 minutes so we can monologue a little bit. Maybe do 5 in the first round. And then I don't know if you want to do you've got a plan. My other suggestion would be is after each person does their 5, maybe we have a quick round of discussion about each person's ideas. But if you've got another list of talking points, that works also. My other suggestion was going to be I can pop up a Google Doc and share my screen so that we can kind of have a here's the things we want to hit. Here's the things we're going to put in a parking lot. If you want me to have, I know that Tom won't be able to see that, but would that help the discussion if I was playing kind of whiteboard over on my end?
Yeah, I think that would help. I appreciate your homework ahead of time and putting together those thoughts and those notes. And I don't know if it's going to be efficient to hit on every single one of those, but maybe having that up could help guide it.
You misunderstand. I that was just so I didn't have to monologue as long.
Okay.
What I meant is I'm gonna have a blank document, and as people are talking about stuff, I can punch them in, and then we're all looking at the same thing and come back to stuff. If there's something we want to table, we can table it, but we'll all be able to see here while we're talking rather than have sort of a I'll start that document. I'll share my screen. Okay. You'll see what I'm talking about while you run the rest of it.
Okay. Well,
can I mention Greg? I think I agree. We should do it more than 2 minutes, but maybe 5 is too long since we have an hour only before one has to leave. Maybe we should do it somewhere in between that 2 and 5.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. I think let's start out with just kind of a, we were presented with some different short-term STR regulations in towns similar to White Salmon. And I think it would be prudent just to maybe discuss where we sit with it, just have an open discussion as you mentioned, Greg, and I'm actually okay with up to 5 minutes. I think they'll probably be, I don't know if mine will go to 5 minutes. So let's get started. We're wasting time. So Greg, if you would like to start and you've laid out some, monologue or you've laid out some notes there, but maybe you can verbalize what your take on the
sure.
STRs were.
I mean, basically, I think if I can boil everything down, and if you hadn't had a chance, I just tried to like bullet point while I was sitting on the couch all the things I was thinking about after reading those documents. I'll start at the bottom, which is some of those regulations were they're just huge, and they become cumbersome, I think, for the city to administer. And then they become cumbersome for residents to manage, right? So that's, I think, the first thing that we should, you know, at the top of the recommendation to me is we got to keep the thing realistic as an operational tool. You know, if the building inspector has to go out and check on people's stuff, he needs a limited list of things he needs to do. If the, you know, if the admin staff has to manage these permits on a yearly basis and check on them, it needs to be like, you know, keep it simple, stupid, right? I think the things that I didn't add in there, I think the broad brushstrokes I was looking at is, I think they should be an outright use in some locations. I think that in other locations, we need to manage them a little tighter. I think we'll get pushback on that no matter what we do. The one thing I didn't, or a couple things I didn't put in there, and I guess this is a quick question. Jan, do we have a lodging tax in the city of White Salmon?
Do, but it's not a we do have a lodging tax, but it's a takeoff of the sales tax, a portion of the state share of the sales tax. So it doesn't increase the 7.5% sales tax. It just comes off of that, the state portion of the sales tax.
I mean, I would recommend then that we seriously look, you know, if you look at cities like Maupin, they've done it and it hasn't thrown things out of whack. And, you know, we might get some pushback on that too, but I think that's something really to look at. I think that I really liked, and I said at the bottom there, is the city of Manzanita kind of nailed it because they said outside the certain zone, anybody can do it. Inside the certain zone, it's a certain percentage, so we maintain housing for people who live here. There was also some teeth to the regulations that I liked, and I think that's, if I go to 30,000 foot level, I want it to be simple, I want it to be easy to administer, I want it to be easy to understand, I want it to protect neighborhoods while allowing people, you know, local residents to be able to make some money that way if they want, and I think it needs to have teeth for both safety. It needs to have teeth for, you know, like permit banking, like we saw with the water meters, right? People trying to snatch up water meters when the shortage was happening. I think that the way Manzanita did it was, if you don't pay us any of your taxes, guess what? You lose your permit. So it's got to be people who are actively trying to do this. I think we should allow people who want to buy a single family home somewhere that's you know, with a great view. If they wanted to turn it into a full-time rental, great. I think they should pay a different permit fee than somebody who is renting a room or an ADU in their backyard who lives there. Mm-hmm. I think those things are, and again, these are my opinions, but I think that we should look at those things. It's got to have some teeth. If people are renting to drunks, they got to get thrown out of town. You know, like they got to lose their permit. So that's probably my 2 minutes. I didn't hit my own clock, but that's simplicity. It's got to be easy to manage. It's got to have some teeth, and it's got to make us some money also at the same time. There you go.
Thank you.
I yield the
Thank
floor.
You. Thank you, Greg. Tom, do you want to go next?
Thank you. I appreciated reading what Greg put down and listed. I think that there's going to be interest. There always has been interest in all the other cities, and the interest for STRs preceded a zone in every one of these cities, and everybody was playing catch up. The matter of fact, Manzanita had the 17.5%. They put a cap on it because 17.5% was how many STRs they had in their R2 and R3 zone at the time in 1994. So they just kind of tried to keep it capped out. And at that time also, Manzanita is a unique spot. It's been in the place where White Salmon is now for 20 or 25 years. It didn't say this, but they at the 1994, 70% of their houses weren't full-time residents. So they're in a unique spot. So, and they needed to keep STRs because they didn't want to just cut it out, cut it, you know, completely. So we ought to be aware of that. I think Jan needs to have some commentary, and I think we ought to talk a little bit about whether these should be commercial or enterprises. And it seems to me that an STR is a commercial business, and we should think about that when we're putting it into our zones. And I think some thought should be given to where it should go and into which zone and how much and what kind of restrictions. I think we should really concentrate on that sometime tonight. I think that it does provide some value because we don't have any hotels. Maybe that'll keep us from having hotels by the, also. Everybody will be could maybe stay in an STR. And I think also there should be some thought as to, I thought it was very informative when Walla Walla separates a smaller room from a whole house. And they have two types of short-term rentals. I think that's something that we should think about as well. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Michael, do you want to chime in next?
With Greg, I like the idea of limiting the concentration not only to a percentage of a neighborhood, but also the distance between rentals, so it's the visual impact is great. I think that the city of Walla Walla said there'd be no RVs on the street. I like that idea as well. That's my input so far.
Thank you, Michael. Seth?
Yeah, thanks. Those are some really good points. So I would like to, I'm not going to respond to any of them in particular in this round. I'd rather just kind of make my own. And one thing I really think we should do is link it to current zoning. I don't like the idea of having so zoned areas within a zone that you're allowed to have them and zoned areas where you aren't. I think it makes it confusing and it makes it complex, and it sort of imposes winners and losers on the community that's already here. So you maybe have bought in R2, but all of a sudden your R2 sub R2 that's not allowed to have short-term rentals. So I think, my main overarching view is that we need to enable, I think they should be allowed. I'll put that out there. And I think that we need to enable it to benefit the city of White Salmon and the residents of White Salmon. My main concern is the city becoming a town that is primarily composed of houses that are short-term rental or not permanently occupied. And a couple of things that I've seen that I really do like that the aspect of is, for example, the city of Manzanita allows only if a resident of the city of Manzanita can have an interest in only one STR, so that you cannot be a serial STR owner and have lots throughout the city. There are other municipalities that require that you actually live on the lot. I think that may that may be going too far, but I think that it is moving in the direction of preventing monetization of the real estate for investment purposes. And I think that's really what I would like to see avoided. I would like people to come buy real estate here to live here. And if in part of living here, they have an ADU or they short-term rental their home when they're not occupying it, I like the idea of that, but I don't really support the idea of houses being solely owned for the purpose of STRs. So that's what I think I like the idea of keeping it simple. I like the idea of if we're going to allow it, I think everybody should be allowed to be a winner. I don't think we should say this area is now a new zoning that allows it and this area is another zoning that doesn't allow it. And I think that we should aim to keep our community from being for a better word, lack of a better word, sort of financialized into something that is just an investment community. And that's, I'll yield my time.
Thank you, Seth. I agree. I made notes prior that, and I picked that up from the Manzanita as well as you, Seth, that there has to be some provision that limits someone from coming in, you know, and it could be a big, could be a big company that comes in and purchases up numerous homes because they see profits there. So I think we got to make sure that whatever we adopt limits that. I think the commercial aspect, the question that Jan posed as it relates to, you know, what is this use? Well, I don't see it as outright commercial. I don't see it as outright residential. I think it's a unique use that, you know, should have its own ordinance. And I would have to give some thought to whether, you know, a conditional use process would benefit anybody. That seems like it would put a lot of burden on the city. I do like Manzanita's cap. I think they have it at 17% of housing stock. One thing to mention that I see that differs from Hood River and their STR policy is, and I speak from.
I'm going to continue to call some.
Whoever is the meeting host can actually selectively mute participants by pressing the little
blue button. I don't know who's that coming from.
Okay, not me.
Oh,
not
he actually just muted himself. That was Tom. So
okay, so one thing I would like to point out is you know, one difference, and I see this from my occupation, is we see a lot of influx into our city for tax purposes. And so adopting something similar to Hood River where it's a primary residence, well, that is a goal of a lot of high net worth people that are coming to our area as a second, you know, as a primary, but not really, you know? So I would have some concerns of adopting something identical to Hood River for that fact. I do think, you know, I do believe in free markets, but I do think that this is something that we have to look at and put forth some regulation on it. And I think that cap, I would be curious to find out, Jen, and I think it was mentioned in our last meeting, whether it's even, I don't even know if it's really possible, just to kind of get a barometer on where we currently are at as far as number of STRs as it relates to our total housing stock in the city. And I think the other thing that I noted was parking, having a discussion on parking and also just, you know, lastly, I just want to say, and I think I task people with it, you know, I think it's important, you know, as people have this, as, you know, as part of our civic duty is to really get out there and try to get as much input from our fellow white salmon people. So we're not just stuck in this vacuum, you know, preaching our own thoughts. I mean, this is going to affect everybody. And I would sleep better at night knowing that, you know, our input is broad-based and not just our own initiatives. So with that, I'll end our first open discussion. I actually will leave it open to any recommendations as far as what our first topic would be. I mean, we could follow does anybody have, yeah.
Ross, could I maybe just summarize kind of what I just heard a little bit as a staff person who maybe is helping write up later on, broad goals and policies might hear it. It sounds like most people want to allow short-term rentals. Keeping the regulations and guidance simple. As you know, the city already has a fairly simple registration process. So that part does address things like, if we had complaints, we would actually go and inspect short-term rentals. At this time, we don't require inspections, so the building official doesn't go and inspect them. If we had a neighborhood complaint or we had renters complain to us about the condition of a short-term rental, we would inspect that. But most owners keep their short-term rentals in good shape, because then if they don't have renters come back. I also heard that there were a number of you that referenced the Manzanita code, particularly into possibly capping the code. It sounds like overall, maybe it would be you guys would decide later on down the road or through a policy that these would be allowed outright, maybe in all the zones, instead of having a conditional use permit. But maybe there are guidance around that. So like whenever you get to the commercial part of the goals and policies, that again, maybe the short-term rentals are limited. I think right now residential in the commercial zone is limited to 50%. Correct me if I'm wrong, Erica. 50% of the building can only be used for residential purposes. So maybe that's how they would be allowed. You know, again, they would be an outright use allowed in the commercial zone up to 50% of a facility.
60.
Can I interrupt?
So I'm just kind of summarizing these things. Parking, I think that's kind of an issue. But it sounds like there seems to be a little bit of a consensus as to allow them, keep it simple, don't use a conditional use permit process because that's a lot more work, and look at maybe the Manzanita code for some kind of cap. Just as a comment to the STRs, of course, COVID-19, none of the employees except myself are working in the office. And so in March, we had planned on doing some work, taking the Airbnb and VRBO sites and actually going out into the field and trying to locate short-term rentals. We know, I mean, we can just go through Airbnb and count how many there are that are advertised in White Salmon, and that'll tell you currently, at least through Airbnb, how many are being advertised. The number grows all the time. We do have several landlords who own a number of short-term rentals. So that's something to think about. Also, in policy guidance, are those people grandfathered in? And I think in some of the codes, you may have seen some language about grandfathering. It's always a question. Some landlords have a lot, some landlords have a handful. And then some landlords live in a house and then they own another house that's a short-term rental, totally separate properties. So that's something to think about. We have this existing situation going on, and how does that get grandfathered in?
Okay, thank you, Jen. So let's just try to narrow in and just have a discussion going around everybody as far as how they see STRs operating in the commercial zone, and whether that's a residential use, whether that's a commercial use, or whether that's something in between. Limit it to 2 minutes and speak your thoughts on that. We'll go through the same rotation. Greg?
All right. my, and again, this is just off the hip on this one because I hadn't chewed on the idea of commercial or residential use. I think that if the short-term rental, the number of permits in the zone is limited to some percentage, then I don't think, I think at that point, then it still fits in that residential use. And when I say percentage, I mean not only the whole zone, but also in a building, like we were talking about, the 60% of a commercial building could be residential. In one of the codes, I believe it was, and I hate, I'll keep going back to that one, but I think it was really elegant. Manzanita had it set up, I believe, maybe it was Manzanita, where they only allowed on an R2, one short-term rental per R2 unit, so if you've got townhouses, you can only have one of them as a short term. And I think that same thing could apply to a commercial district. So if we, where you would still consider the short term rental a residential use, if your whole entire second story of your commercial building wasn't short term rentals, right? I worked for a guy post-college who had nightclubs in a ski area in upstate New York, and his entire upstairs, two stories, three stories of, and I'll side note, I really think that having Bill take a peek at houses as part of the permit process is important, because this guy had a death trap. I mean, he made lots of money at it, but he basically was running an unlicensed hotel, packed with drunk people, and we know drunk people always make good decisions in 150-year-old highly flammable buildings. But that aside, like, I really think that if a building wants to do that, if they want to, then they're really an inn, right? And that's a commercial use. But if they have 8 apartments, and 2 of them are short-term rentals, I don't think that they're really operating a hotel. I think that they're managing the risk of vacancy of their rental units in a pretty sound way, right? Because then they can bounce. Let's say they can't find somebody, somebody moves out, they could short-term rental one of their units for, 2 or 3 months during the summer before they get a full-time person in the next fall. I'm probably getting close to my 2 minutes. In the commercial zone, provided the short-term rentals are not more than some percentage of your total number of units in the building, I would see it as a residential use.
Thank you. Tom? Do we still have Tom there?
Yeah, he's muted.
Okay. Michael, and then we go back to Tom.
Okay. If you have, I go back to, I think the last spring or last winter, Ross, you may remember this, where Pat hit us for the fact that he was going to approve a motel, short-term rental, right across from the Inn of White Salmon. And that hit us between the eyes, if I remember. It hit me that way, and I think I'm talking to everybody who was there. And I want to see some process where we have, if something like that comes about, that we as a planning commission have some controls. Easy. Pat said he didn't have to come to us because it was a commercial enterprise within a commercial zone. Therefore, the planning commission wasn't involved. I didn't think that was right, and I think I speak for the people who were there. Didn't think it was right either. So some sort of control, whether it could be considered, it can be considered residential as far as the usage, but I think it somehow has to be commercial as far as the establishment of it. If I make it myself clear.
Yeah, no, I that great points there. All right. Is Tom unmuted? I can't see. I apologize.
No, he's not unmuted. And okay.
I'm unmuted. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Oh, good. Finally figured it out. As Erica said, there's 60% of the commercial zone can have residential in it. There's going to be some residential areas that probably can be short-term rented. And I personally think that's the best place to put them because I believe it's a commercial activity. They're paying taxes. It's a business. And they differentiate between short-term and long-term rentals. It's okay to rent in a residential area. Short-term is different. I don't think everybody agrees with me though, but I think it's a commercial activity. I think that it should be allowed in the commercial zone and encouraged in the commercial zone. Now, I don't know where I read, but there was one ordinance and one city that was concerned about losing long-term rental spaces in their commercial area. And they had restrictions on whether or not a long-term rental apartment could be short-term rented. Of course, they had concerns about losing long-term rental properties. And I think that's what we need to think about too. Makes it difficult. None of this is easy. And I'll say again that the only reason this 17.5% cap on short-term rentals in Manzanita was exactly the amount that they had in 1994. They just conveniently said, we're not going to go any further. And there's a large waiting line for those. So just beware of what we're opening up potentially. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Seth?
As a sort of first stab, I think that one thing is that I would like commercial, if they're in the commercial use or commercial zone, they would require off-street or remote parking options. I kind of don't want the whole of White Salmon just being parking for STRs. I'd like to understand more about the implications of it being commercial versus residential. One thing that comes to mind is, could a commercial enterprise displace a ground floor commercial suite for, say, for a business that would then be converted into a residential thing, and all of a sudden you start losing spaces for businesses in downtown White Salmon as they get converted to commercial to STRs. If that is the case, I think that should be limited in some way. I don't believe that we want any of our commercial buildings converted into just residential use or quote unquote sort of residential like use. And I think that would be an important consideration. So those are the two things that came to me for this.
Thank you, Seth. So all great points. I think as Hood River, has unlimited regulations. Has unlimited regulations in Hood River in the commercial district. I see that as having merit. I also realize we have a much smaller commercial zone. There is also some houses that are in the commercial zone that are grandfathered in, and I think we have to take that into consideration. If it's a house that has been, grandfathered in the residential. I agree with Tom. I think this is where, I think in our commercial zone is where these can operate and lower the impact into our neighborhoods. I don't see it as an outright commercial use. I think, and Seth, I think your points are good. I think there's, it could be a conditional use permit that could maybe help And as Michael said as well, as we experienced with what was as he described across from the White Salmon Inn, I don't think that is going to work well for our city. So I guess to summarize, I think that STRs can be, you know, should be located in the commercial zone and have less regulations as far as numbers, as far as if we do cap there. But I don't think that it's just an outright commercial use, even though it's really close. So with that, I would like to move on. And I don't know who brought it up, but I think it's a worthwhile topic, is, you know, the different types of STRs, meaning you have an STR that is where you're occupying the house, but you're renting out one room or maybe two rooms, and that, you know, helps you in either a time of need or, you know, can operate in a lot of different ways. And I think functions much, much differently than just renting out the entire house and not being on the premise. So I would just like to have a brief discussion to those who want to discuss that in regards to how we may look at that and be able to navigate that, or even if it's a talking point. Greg?
I want to throw something on the parking lot list for maybe the end of this conversation. I was not at the meeting you guys were talking about because I wasn't a commissioner yet for that discussion of another hotel across from the Young White Salmon.
Greg, sorry to interrupt. It was not a hotel. Did you see what was proposed at all?
No.
It was like townhouses and condos. It was a full residential proposal in the commercial district.
Oh, but not to be rent. It wasn't like a hotel rental.
It was going to be a mix of residential, and then the commercial, the 40% commercial was going to be STRs. If that makes sense.
Gotcha. Okay, that does make sense. Thank you. Types of rentals. I guess the first thing to tackle here, I'll follow up with your example. I agree. I think it's a great idea to be able to let somebody let a room. In the same way, I think it would be fine to let them let an ADU in their backyard or a tiny home, depending on how that regulation works out. I talk with my hands, but it looks horrible on the video. We start chasing that one down the rabbit hole, because if it's okay to rent a room to support your mortgage, is it then okay to rent out your tiny house to help support your mortgage? Or is it okay to rent out your other townhouse that's next door to the one you just built to pay your mortgage? Or like the folks who sent the comment in, is it okay to do an STR of your entire house because you want to have someone help you pay down your mortgage so that when you retire, you can live there full time? As much as I want to, I'd love to discuss all of those things. I think it's hard to. I think instead we have to look at it from a different angle of what do we want to allow, because I can come up with all sorts of great stories about why we should do one or the other and hypothetical situations. But I think once you decide you're going to do STRs, I think you have to allow them. You have to figure out what you're going to allow, what you're not, but not worry. I'd be really hard pressed to justify to a community member why they couldn't rent their house if I could rent my ADU. So I think, and this will take me back to a side, come back to it conversation about not being serial STR owners. I think there's two sides to that. Anybody who's going to be a serial STR owner is going to come to you with multiple different LLCs, just like the development next to me was owned by one LLC, and then he built another development that's another LLC. I like corporations. My house and my shop burned down, like having a corporation protected me personally. So I think that it's okay to say we're not going to have serial STR owners and people buying up rows of houses, but anybody who really wants to do that can just go change corporate names or find new investors, and it can happen. I think the reality is in a lot of this, we will spend a lot of time talking about the things that might happen, when really we're not with no regulation, or not no regulation, but with a very limited control over this right now. Our town isn't overrun with short-term rentals. It's cost prohibitive. Ask Matt Siegel down at the hotel. He could have bought up a pile of houses, but it was cheaper to build a hotel. So I think that we should be looking at this not from how is this. I think we should be talking in the types of rentals. I don't think we should try and manage them, try and make some possible and others not possible. I think we should look at it as how do we focus the policy so that we don't detract from the value of our current neighborhoods. I think we should allow them because there's people in every neighborhood who hate them and who want them. I think we should say, okay, if we're going to allow them, how do we allow them? How do we allow you to rent a whole house so that it doesn't become a burden on the neighborhood? How do we allow you to rent a room so it doesn't become a burden on the neighborhood? And that might be through quantity. It might be through, you know, a variety of different ways. But so I guess if I were to sum up that rambling thought, I think that it's important to let them all happen. I think we need to manage how they happen.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. I just want to interject. You bring up a good point, and I think it's something that, you know, is embedded in this and is going to, I think we have a great opportunity as well in this, and that's ADUs. And how do ADUs and STRs interact, and how are they viewed? So, you know, as I mentioned, that scenario of renting out a room in your house, and is that considered an STR, and how is that going to be regulated? I also want to open up the discussion to the ADU scenario and how that is viewed by the commissioners as it relates to STRs.
Tom? One last thing real quick before I click mute on myself. Jan, the other thing I have on my written in large letters is the legal question. At some point, I assume that the city attorney will be part of this conversation, because we can talk about all the things we might want to do, but we might be shooting ourselves in the foot, because if we allow one and disallow other, we open ourselves up to litigation.
Yeah, and again, remember, this is very, what you're going to see here are very broad goals and policies. And once you've adopted, you know, all of these notes are really good to have, because they sort of go into the parking lot that Greg refers to. Because when you start to implement the comprehensive plan that you adopt, that's when you get down to the nitty-gritty details of your zoning code. You're implementing those goals and policies. And so that's why I kind of keep bringing you back to like kind of the bigger picture. I think everything you're saying is excellent, but there are some things where, it's clear that cities in Oregon and Washington do limit the number of STRs. They limit where they can go. Our zoning codes, again, they have to be compliant with the comprehensive plan, limit how you can use commercial property. It limits how you can use your residential property. And so I don't, you know, of course, when we get to the zoning codes, the city attorney will be reviewing any proposed amendments or any new codes. So those questions will come up, I'm thinking about a year from now, when you get into the details, but I think having all of these notes in this parking lot or a hopper is really good. Just a comment about ADUs, and you guys are talking about the different zones. I think I've spoke to this a couple of times. I'll be real brief. Is there are single family property owners who are in traditional single family neighborhoods, and these neighborhoods might even be zoned R2. And years ago, Tom will remember this, is there was a wholesale rezoning of the city of White Salmon's single family neighborhoods into R2. not a lot of R2 has happened in those neighborhoods, but they still are zoned R2. And then there still are some traditional R1 neighborhoods. But ADUs are allowed in all R1 neighborhoods. And some property owners that live in those traditional single family neighborhoods don't like that. They feel like, why do we even have R1 if you're going to allow ADUs? You've allowed a second dwelling unit on that property. And then the question of the short-term rentals comes into play. Because then typically a lot of our property owners that build ADUs or have ADUs are using them for STRs. So, and I do think as we go through the comprehensive plan, Ross and whoever else talked about public input, we're going to get a lot of opportunity for public input in that process when we start rolling out, review and really seeking public comment on the goals and policies. And then, of course, when you get to the implementing phase, then you'll really hear from them.
Yeah. Thank you, Jan. Yeah. So let's just, it can be just Seth, you got to go. So do you want to jump in here?
Yeah. Do you mind if I go out of sequence and just give a very quick one?
Please.
Okay.
Please.
So I think that if we were to distinguish, I would encourage us to distinguish in tax rate only. I think that one that is a rental of a whole family home is clearly a larger impact on the community than renting of a room, or is at least the potential for a larger impact on the community. And I think that that should sort of have a commensurate change in what the owner should pay the community. I also think that just in terms of what we allow, this is maybe related, is that I think each application for an STR should be considered on its own merits. I therefore don't really like the idea of community caps. I don't think that we should have to consider the entire state of the community to understand whether a given person is allowed. And I also think that the community fluxes so much with the growth of the community and trying to maintain a catalog of what's an STR, who has an STR right, which are the new houses, when did they get occupancy, all of these different things start to get really difficult to manage. And I think that I would encourage us to say, this is what it takes to be an STR, and just draw a box around it of whatever type we want to do, and consider each one on its own merits. And that's all I have on that. Thank you. And I'm going to go ahead and sign off quickly after this.
Seth, okay. Yes. Quick follow-up question.
Ross.
Is it sounds like you're wanting, when you say each should be on its own merit, that sounds to me like a conditional use process.
I think that is, if we have a set of conditions that are required, I think that it should be on a unit. It should not be on that unit within the context of the community. I think each one should be, if it's like, you must have so much parking, then that's what's required for that person to do it, not what's required that plus something else can do outside. And a conditional use permit is certainly a mechanism to do that. I agree. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
I have something to add, and it follows what Greg was talking about. And he was talking about the types of types of STRs, and he mentioned that it would be nice for a person that needs to have some added income to rent out a house. Rent out a room, excuse me. And that would be a form of a STR. A lot of cities, Bend is one, Walla Walla is another, have differentiated between types of STRs just for that reason. And Bend is fairly, I think they have four, which might be a little out of hand. But I can see a couple of differentiation points. One would be if you're living in a house and you're renting out a room. Another would be if you're living in a house and renting out an ADU. There is another person there that is a part-time resident. A lot of those people are going to be living in White Salmon, where they are here for a part of the year and then they leave. So they're living, but then when they leave, they rent out their house. And then there's the last person, which I guess I have less concern about. This is the person that's an investor and he's buying up housing and making ADUs. And So there's four right there. So if we define the type of STR, then we can deal with that STR in an individual manner. And it doesn't have to be dealt with. It's got a definition, and it's dealt with in a certain way. And it's dealt with maybe differently in different zones. Now, this isn't really simple, but you know, honestly, the best ones probably have been built and they become more complex. And I don't like that, but complex things require some complex analysis. So I think we should consider or just be aware that there are different STRs, different types of STRs out there, and deal with them accordingly. At least talk about it. Thank you.
Okay, Michael.
Mary Jane, do we have standards for ADUs? What constitutes an ADU?
Yes, we do.
We do.
So, an accessory dwelling unit, to build an accessory dwelling unit in the city, or to convert a portion of your house to an accessory dwelling unit, requires a conditional use permit, and there's a process through going through that. So if you go to the zoning code and you look up accessory dwelling units, you'll find those current requirements.
Okay. I don't know if anybody else has used short-term units, short-term stays. I have. We've gone across the country twice for using those, and we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you will. And one of the places I stayed in Canada was a semi-converted garage. And the bathroom was in the house next door, which had to go downstairs in the middle of the night, which was not very pleasant. exposed wiring. So, you know, anything we, whether it's an ADU or a whole house, I think before it's utilized, has to meet the building codes, meet safety, health and safety codes.
Yeah.
And we have that already in our health, in the fire life safety inspection sheet that the city puts out and requires. I don't know if the city requires a yearly inspection or yearly self-inspection as some other cities do, but I certainly see a need for it. You know, I think if we allow SDUs without those safety precautions, we may be opening ourselves up to, as a city, to lawsuits if something should happen.
Good point.
That's my thing for now.
Okay, I'll just wrap up that discussion. And I don't necessarily, I'm not married to any of this. I just I think that there are different types. I think it requires some critical thinking, and you know, I think as we dive deeper in this, you know, there is going to be a correlation. There is going to be a connection between ADUs and STRs. And as I said, you know, as we go through the comp plan, I think both of those, we have opportunities to create meaningful and positive change. One thing that I just want to mention is an experience that I had this weekend going to Bend. It was my family, my brother's family. So we had eight of us. And granted, we were last minute trying to find a vacation rental, which was very slim pickings. But I was blown away by the fees, the hidden fees that all of the providers had. Cleaning fees of $250, a special fee of $250 and then the hotel tax. So even though there was houses available for $400 at the end of the day, it ended up being cheaper for us to go to a hotel and stay there. And we actually enjoyed that very much. And on the flip side, you know, I've also through folks that I've worked with, people have gotten into STRs because on paper they look really attractive financially. But if you're the one operating that Airbnb and you're trying to maximize your profits, so you're doing the cleaning, you're managing all of that, it's a lot of work. And I think that it's not for everybody. And I think that there's a lot of people who've gotten into the STRs and have opted out. So I think we also have to recognize that as we go through this process and try to gather that data to ensure that we know what we're really up against and we're not in that, you know, I think Greg mentioned, you know, we're not trying to go after a ghost. And so I think we should be looking at that as well. I do have fears and I don't have firsthand knowledge, just rumor mill, but there are some big corporations that are getting into, I mean, I just saw today Airbnb's, you know, they're going to go public at $30 billion probably this year. And there's other outfits that are providers as well that are on that same trajectory. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that some of these very big organizations would look at White Salmon as a huge opportunity and find ways to game the system and eat up a tremendous amount of a significant amount of our housing stock for investor gain. So I even though I think some people have pointed that out as not being a point of concern, I personally feel that it is. So with that, I think we've had great discussion. I would like to wrap up this discussion with a last go around. If somebody had something similar to what I just discussed or something else that they would like to discuss in closing. And I really appreciate everybody's time and comments.
So Ross, Greg? Quick comment. Vacasa, yeah, is a Airbnb or short-term rental management company. They don't rent. You know, those they're still rented through Airbnb or VRBO, but they will aggressively, and before COVID-19, they were very aggressive here in White Salmon. I mean, I had information sent to me, I had phone calls, I had stuff left on my door, we had complaints about them. And so they will come in, particularly if you just have like an apartment, right? They will come in and they will bring the furniture and they will furnish it. They will take care of all the cleaning. They're one of the companies where those hidden fees come from. And so they were extremely aggressive here in White Salmon prior to COVID-19. I haven't heard much about them lately, and that's probably because of COVID-19. But it was interesting because I had a gentleman who had a conditional use permit for long-term rentals, and he almost got sucked into the Vacasa thing, and he trying to get out of that was a challenge to him. So it does happen. So what you're talking about, Ross, is happening to some degrees, even at the management company level, because they make money off of you. So the more short-term rentals they're managing in a community, the better.
Correct. But I do, you know, going, I think, to Michael's point of his experience that, you know, I doubt that was operated by someone like Vacasa.
No.
Or somebody like that. So as much as I think that we have to have our guard up against something of that level, of that size, you know, if I was to rent out my house as an STR, I wouldn't want to be the cleaner. I wouldn't want to be the manager, and I would see benefit in handing that over to a company like Vacasa. My concern that I was raising is when these companies start to see, when they start to see the numbers work in their way, where they actually own the property. And I think that's, you know, not to say that that's happening, but I think it's something that we need to be aware of, or at least
look at. Well, Vacasa was encouraging people to short-term rental their property. It wasn't even just management. It was like, you need to short-term rental your property.
Yeah, understood. Okay, so let's just in closing go around again, minus Seth. Greg, is there anything in closing that you would like to add to the discussion?
I think it's an opportunity to bring revenue into the community. When I was doing economic development a few years back, I used to talk to people about the idea of this like cyclone of money that exists in your community. And the way the world works today is that a lot of times, a lot of that cyclone, the money blows out the top end and goes other places. It goes to Amazon, it goes to who knows what. I think this offers an opportunity to increase the input size on that cyclone. And I think it offers the opportunity for more than just short-term, more than just property owners to make money. You know, if you look at these other communities, or some of these other communities that have short-term rentals, there are local property management companies that are competing just fine with Vacasa and whatnot. Because of the way the permits and regulations are written, it forces especially the out-of-town landlord, it forces them to use local businesses, in essence, to make sure that rental can be rented and managed within the city's code. So I think we should just, keeping all that in mind, we still need to keep it simple, because I don't want to solve problems we don't have. We can always come back and add to the code in 6 months or 12 months if we start to see problems. But I think if we create something that's too complex, it's doomed to fail, because we don't have the staff to manage a really complex program.
Thank you. Tom?
I agree that it's going to be some kind of effect on staff, and I think that we should consider, I think Greg mentioned that we don't want tire kickers. We should try to make sure that the application fee is plenty high, and get a renewal fee every year. I think that it's going to add time to staff. Some of these places have a specialized staff person to watch over this, the whole process. I think that we need to be careful and not just open up the floodgates. I kind of agree with you, Ross, that there, it may seem a little bit better to an individual when they first start renting for more money per night, short-term rather than long-term, but maybe they won't want to do it because of the work. I've done a couple of long-term rentals and I don't do the short-term rental, just kind of for that reason. Now that COVID's going on, though, long-term rents are sometimes an issue, because the person that's renting, they're getting rent relief, I have a couple of people that I'm insensitive to, and they're renting at about half price. Short-term rental, you don't have that problem. We just need to keep talking about this, learn from other places, and just beware that there are different types of short-term rent properties, and we should deal with them, and they're going to be in different areas of the city. And I think that it's not just one size fits all. Thank you.
Michael?
As I mentioned, I've taken used a short-term rentals three times, the spring of 15, the fall of 18, and the fall of 19. And we noticed that the extra fees have increased considerably. And I don't know if those are fees are taxable. And if it's outside companies, they're gonna be worried more about the bottom line than the quality of the rental, the buildings. And what's that going to do to the neighborhood? If you have non-local people taking care of the property or not taking care of the property. So that's going to, you know, the quality of life in here in White Salmon will be deeply affected. That's all I have to say.
Great. I think I've spoken my thoughts on this, and I think if everybody's okay with it, I think we can check this in the win column, and I would, Jan, can you provide some guidance on where we go next? I think we have another meeting in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so you have another meeting in 2 weeks. You'll have a public hearing on the amendments to the cell tower tower code. One of the things that we can do is maybe take all of these notes and kind of, again, try to drill them up into like broader, maybe some general policy statements, and then try to get at least a consensus to some level of that guidance, and then you know, provide that as we move forward in the different elements in the comp plan. I see these policy guidance affecting residential and commercial. And again, I think keeping these notes in the parking lot is really important as we, you know, as you adopt a comprehensive plan. There's all been all kinds of ideas that you guys have talked about. And then those are gonna really come to fruition when you're implementing those goals and policies in your actual zoning codes, which is where I think we're hearing keep it simple, but there's a but with that. Like you, it sounds like, you know, there's at least a consensus of that it maybe needs to be monitored to some level. There might need to be maybe quotas, protecting neighborhoods. I think that's very clear from all of the planning commissioners that if these are allowed, that how do we protect the neighborhoods and the quality of life? And you know, quality of life is part of your vision statement in the community. So I think sometimes coming back to that vision is also helpful when all this stuff gets rounded up and you start looking at the policies, the goals and policies. So at the next meeting, I don't know that we'll have our land use consultant there. We're still working through that. Been trying to get a Zoom meeting with everyone involved. It has been challenging. I'm hoping that will happen on Monday. So it's possible that if we can wrap that up, we'll have the land use consultants at your meeting on the 28th. But you'll definitely have a public hearing and then maybe a quick review of where we're at on the short-term rentals. I think you guys could spend months talking about short-term rentals. and I don't think that we need to at this point. I think we maybe have one more session looking over maybe staff drilling down on what you guys have provided, and then coming to some consensus and moving that into getting incorporated into the comprehensive plan. Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I would just like to say in parting, I think it's really important and critical for us to reach out to our fellow neighbors and community members and business owners. And, you know, now that we've had this discussion, start bouncing that around and see what the response is and do whatever we can to engage with the community. So, you know, as we proceed forward, we're confident that, you know, the direction that we're going follows suit with our community and that it's not just, you know, the five of us in a vacuum. So with that, I would like to adjourn the meeting and thank everybody for their participation and look forward to talking with you guys in 2 weeks.
Bye guys.
Thank you, Ross.
Bye.